The visit. Mad Dog came by to see how we made out after the duster. He didn't come to court me. I didn't think he had. We visited more than an hour. The sky cleared enough to see Black Mesa. I showed him my father's pond. Mad Dog said he was going to Amarillo to sing on the radio, and if he sang good enough, they might give him a job there. You'd leave the farm? I asked. He nodded. You'd leave school? He shrugged. Mad Dog scooped a handful of dust like a boy in a sandpit. He said, I love this land, no matter what. I looked at his hands. They were scarless. Mad Dog stayed longer than he planned. He ran down the road back to his father's farm when he realized the time. Dust rose each place his foot fell, leaving a trace of him long after he had gone. April, 1935. Freak Show. The fellow from Canada, James Kingsbury, photographer for the Toronto Star way up there in Ontario, the man who took the first pictures of the Dion quintuplets, left his homeland and came to Joyce City, looking for some other piece of oddness, hoping to photograph the drought and the dust storms. And he did, with the help of Bill Rotterdaw and Handy Poole, who took him to the sandiest farms and showed off the boniest cattle in the county. Mr. Kingsbury's pictures of those Dion babies got them famous, but it also got them taken from their mother and father and put on display like a freak show, like a tent full of two-headed calves. Now I'm wondering what will happen to us after he finishes taking pictures of our dust. April, 1935. Help from Uncle Sam. The government is lending us money to keep the farm going. Money to buy seed, feed loans for our cow, for our mule, for the chicken still alive, and the hog, as well as a little bit of feed for us. My father was worried about paying back because of what Ma had said. But Mrs. Love, the lady from Fira, assured him he didn't need to pay a single cent until the crops came in. And if the crops never came, then he wouldn't pay a thing. So my father said okay. Anything to keep going. He put the paperwork on the shelf beside Ma's book of poetry and the invitation from Aunt Ellis. He just keeps that invitation from her, glowering down at me from the shelf above the piano. April, 1935. Let down. I was invited to graduation to play the piano. I couldn't play. It had been too long. My hands wouldn't work. I just sat on the piano bench, staring down at the keys. Everyone waited. When the silence went on so long, folks started to whisper. Arlie Wonderdale lowered his head, and Miss Freeland started to cry. I don't know. I let them down. I didn't cry. Too stubborn. I got up and walked off the stage. I thought maybe if my father ever went to Doc Rice to do something about the spots on his skin, Doc could check my hands too, tell me what to do about them. But my father isn't going to Doc Rice, and now I think we're both turning to dust. May, 1935. Hope. It started out as snow. Oh, big flakes, floating softly, catching on my sweater, lacy on the edges of my sleeves. Snow covered the dust, softened the fences, soothed the parched lips of the land. And then it changed. Halfway between snow and rain, sleet, glazing the earth. Until at last it slipped into rain, light as mist. It was the kindest kind of rain that fell. Soft, and then a little heavier, helping along what had already fallen into the hard pan earth until it rained. Steady as a good friend who walks beside you, not getting in your way, staying with you through a hard time. And because the rain came so patient and slow at first, and built up strength as the earth remembered how to yield, instead of washing off, the water slid in into the dying ground and softened its stubborn pride and eased it back toward life. And then, just when we thought it would end, after three such gentle days, the rain came slamming down, tons of it soaking into the ready earth, to the primed and greedy earth and soaking deep. It kept coming, thunder booming, lightning kicking, dancing from the heavens down to the prairie, and my father dancing with it, dancing outside in the drenching night, with the gutters racing, with the earth puddled and pleased, with my father's near-finished pond filling. When the rain stopped, my father splashed out to the barn and spent 2 days and two nights cleaning dust out of his tractor until he got it running again. In the dark, headlights shining, he idled toward the freshened fields, certain the grass would grow again, certain the weeds would grow again, certain the wheat would grow again, too. May, 1935. The rain's gift. The rain has brought back some grass, and the ranchers have put away the feed cake and sent their cattle out to graze. Joe DeLaFleur is singing in his saddle again. May, 1935. Hope smothered. While I washed up dinner dishes in the pan, the wind came from the west, bringing dust. I just stripped all the gummed tape from the windows. Now I've got dust all over the clean dishes. I can hardly make myself get started cleaning again. Mrs. Love is taking applications for boys to do CCC work. Any boy between 18 and 28 can join. I'm too young and the wrong sex. But what I wouldn't give to be working for the CCC somewhere far from here, out of the dust. May, 1935. Sunday afternoon at the Amarillo Hotel. Everybody gathered at the Joyce City Hardware and Furniture Company on Sunday to hear Mad Dog Craddock sing on WDAG from the Amarillo Hotel. They hooked up speakers, and the sweet sound of Mad Dog's voice filled the creaky aisles. Arlie Wonderdale was in Amarillo with Mad Dog, singing and playing the piano, and the Black Mesa boys were there, too. I ached for not being there with them. But there was nothing more most folks in Joy City wanted to do than spend a half hour leaning on counters, sitting on stairs, resting in chairs, staring at the hardware and the tableware, listening to hometown boys making big-time music on the radio. They kept time in the aisles, hooting after each number, and when Mad Dog finished his last song, they sent the dust swirling, cheering and whooping, patting each other on the back as if they'd been featured on WDAG themselves. I tried cheering for Mad Dog with everyone else, but my throat felt like a trap had snapped down on it. That Mad Dog, he didn't have a thing to worry about. He sang good, all right. He'll go as far as he wants. May, 1935.